Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 21st of May, rolling into a Memorial Day weekend. Joining us this morning is, well, by title, he's the superintendent of Eureka City Schools, Fred Van Fleck. Now he's educator looking for a job, Fred Van Fleck.
Oh, no.
Or is
no,
it budget? Is a budget yeah, no, guy, a budget. Fred Van Fleck, huh?
Well, I guess all could be true. I want to dispel the rumors, though. I'm not looking for a job.
No. I mean, you know what I meant. Not being able to visit campuses and seeing kids there and all that kind of stuff that's normal for you for this time of the year.
Yes, it is. But I'll tell you what. It is actually busier in the office. Well, that's not true. It's just as busy in the office right now as it is when kids are there. It's different. I mean, it's different. We're reinventing a whole system, and so it's just, wow.
Yeah, and we didn't think we could, so somebody decided to play a trick on us to prove that we could, and by golly, they were right. Winston, why do we say that?
All right, I'm going to try out a Latin one. Proletariat.
Oh, that's not going to work for me.
Proletariat? That's not Latin.
Where does the term proletariat come from?
Where? I would guess Rome. Well, that's, you know, from the Roman Senate. That's what I would guess. Educated one with a post-high school degree under his belt. What do you say? Good. Thank you.
Working-class people?
Winston.
Well, Fred was closer than you.
Okay.
So he gets the credit. From the Latin proletarius, the name given by the ancient Romans to the lowest class in the community. This class, the historians of that time said, contributes nothing to the state but offspring.
Well, I got the Roman part right.
Hey, I mean, that is a real contribution to the educational system.
Yeah.
You know, we're already working on all of our enrollment projections for kindergarten 5 years from now.
I was going to ask you how's virtual learning doing with virtual budgeting?
Those are two totally different topics, and you know, it's really interesting because we have two big conversations going on right now, and one of those is what is education going to look like next fall, and then the other one is what is a budget going to look like next fall? And those two really interplay with each other, obviously. But, you know, what's really crazy, I lived through the 2008 Great Recession, where I was the chief business official of a very large school district down in the Central Valley. And one of the things that was so different about then was, yes, it was huge cuts, but we knew the kids were showing up next fall when we were making all of our plannings for the reduced revenue that we were getting from the state. So now we're getting told that we're going to have a huge amount of reduced revenue from the state again. But the thing that's so difficult for us is we can't rely on our normal enrollment projections because we don't know what school's going to look like for sure next fall. And so we've had to develop a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C.
With the virtual learning, does the ADA, however that is tracked, the attendance with those, generate the same amount of funds as they would if their shiny faces were in the classroom?
Well, there's the question of the year right now. So what happened this year is that the state came out and said, we're going to stop your attendance on the last day, the last school day of February. And so they stopped counting our attendance at that point. And so anything after that, we were held harmless for. So it didn't matter whether students were in school or students were out of school or any of that as far as the revenue goes. Obviously, for the learning, it matters a lot. But on the revenue side of the house, it didn't matter. And so the big question is, what are they going to do next year as far as how they're going to count that revenue? Because I alluded a little bit to a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. Plan A is instruction as normal. I don't think instruction as normal, how it's traditionally happened, is will be there until there's a vaccine. I just don't think that's going to happen. Plan B is students show up to school, but we have to follow some sort of social distancing protocol and heightened sanitation protocol. And then plan C is distance learning. And that's what we're really doing right now is the plan C model. And so we're hoping we're going to be able to split the difference between the distance learning and the instruction as traditional. But really, that lies in the hands of County Public Health and telling us where we're at with this pandemic and what we're going to be able to do next fall. Early indications are we're going to be able to go back to that plan B, but if we get a resurgence going back on that plan B, we could have to go to the plan C quickly.
Or what if it's the flu instead of this Wuhan virus? I mean, do the same standards apply? Or what is the trigger, so to speak? Is it just this one strain, or is it this is how we're going to be doing business if all of a sudden you had a whole bunch of sore throats or runny noses? Boom, do these standards then kick into play again? Is there any indication it's that, or is it just if it's the county medical officer pulling the trigger?
Well, the big thing that they want us doing is monitoring symptoms. And so we'll likely be taking the temperatures of students when they come to school next fall. And regardless of if you have the flu or if you have COVID, you won't be able to come to school. And so if we have a big uptick in the flu next fall and a bunch of students are showing symptoms, it could potentially kick us right back there because we, as educators, can't really tell the difference between the flu and COVID because we're just monitoring symptoms. We're not actually doing those testing.
Right. So if the student is taken home or kept away or whatever the terminology will be, shelter, you know, hibernation, whatever. Does that mean that the school shuts down, or does that mean that that's an excused absence for 2 weeks?
That's what we don't know yet. So obviously, we want students who have symptoms to not come to school, and so we will highly encourage that. The question is, where do you draw the line between the student who has symptoms and the student who is exposed to somebody who had COVID?
Right.
So that's the thing that's very difficult for us to figure out. One of the things that we're trying to work our way through right now is even with our staff. So I had a staff member ask me yesterday, well, I need to go move my daughter out of Chico State. And I've got to go get her because her place is up at the end of the month. Does that mean that I have to quarantine for 14 days when I get back?
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, lots of different challenges that are out there. We were talking a little bit in the first segment there about attendance and funding and all that kind of stuff. You've also got graduation. And I know from talking to buddies throughout the country that are in the middle of their graduation season now, starting mid-May, that a number of them are doing virtual. A number of them are doing pre-taped. A number of them are doing drive-by. That there is a myriad of different solutions for the creativity that's out there. Has Eureka High School settled in on what graduation is going? Oh, and the other one is to wait until August and do it the more traditional way. Is there a model that Eureka High has embraced yet, or is that still a fluid situation?
Well, we've embraced the model, and Jennifer Johnson, the principal of Eureka High School, has met with the leaders in the senior class and had lots of discussion, and they've come to a conclusion. And what they've decided is that graduation will be on July 31st at 2 p.m. And we have four different possibilities, going back to our different plans. Plan A would be graduation is normal. Everybody can be there. Everything is great. And the likelihood of that is not high. Plan B is we have graduation is normal, still down in Albee Stadium. Remind me to talk to you about Albee Stadium. Down in Albee Stadium with ticketed events, so we only let in so many parents and family so we can provide the social distancing in the stands. I think that's a highly likely outcome. The plan C is we have the graduates there providing them social distancing, but there's no audience and we stream it. And then plan D is the one that we really hope we don't have to go to, and that's a complete virtual graduation. But right now it is planned for July 31st, and the reason we picked that date is because it is 2 weeks before the CSUs are scheduled to start, and even though the CSUs are scheduled to be virtual, many students will be moving to the towns where the CSUs are. UCs actually haven't announced yet. They're expected to announce in the middle of June as far as what their plans are for next fall. Most of the UCs don't start till later, though. Like, for instance, my daughter's going to UC Santa Barbara, and her classes don't start till October.
Right, yeah, the late start, which I think that model really makes a ton of sense anyway, gives a little bit of flexibility in this kind of a scenario. Now, there was some discussion about some of the pressures that the schools are experiencing, and West Coast is kind of seen as its own little deviation from the norm. But in the South, Southeast, Midwest, a lot of the schools are pushing hard, the 4 years, are pushing hard for football, and the reason being economics. That if that doesn't happen and the alumni get frustrated, or if the schools aren't open and kids decide not to attend that school or maybe to take a year off, that a number of these well-recognized educational institutions are staring at bankruptcy. And what does that entail? Nobody really knows yet, but that there's a big push on to have fall sports some way, some shape or form. What about at Eureka High? Are you guys looking at having a fall sports season? Is the CIF come out with anything, or NCS, or even just the local leagues? Are there plans in place for fall sports? Yes, no, or this is what it looks like?
So NCS is certainly talking about it, and they're much in the same position as us in that they're waiting for public health to provide the direction as far as what we're going to do. Football for Eureka High School is not a moneymaker for us, and so the fiscal implication of having football, it actually costs more money for us to put on a football program than we make. And so the fiscal side of it, that's not going to have, one way or another, not going to have any bearing on it at all. The piece that will have a bearing on it for us is just the life experiences that all those students are missing out of. I mean, you think about some of these students, and this could be any sport, it's not just football. They have been playing, many of these students, these sports since they were four, five, 6 years old. And the capstone of that athletic career for many students is their senior year at high school. And think of all these athletes this spring that were going to play baseball or track or whatever their sport may have been, that just didn't get the opportunity to do that, and they were robbed of that opportunity. And the same could be true for football next fall, or soccer next fall, or pick your sport. And it's just, it's really sad.
Well, could Fred, if it does happen with the finances being as they are, could you just do a double round robin locally and not worry about traveling to Timbuktu or down to the Bay Area, or, you know, and keep the travel cost down? Because I would suspect that that's a huge cost factor.
The travel cost definitely is a really driving factor. But a lot of those travel costs are picked up by booster groups and other organizations like that. And so there isn't a tremendous amount of money to be made or savings to be had by not having sports. As far as what our budget looks like, it's tens of thousands of dollars, without a doubt, to put on a sports program. But you think about the trade-off with that, and now I'm speaking for myself, not for the board. You think about the trade-off for that few tens of thousands of dollars to the experience that the students get. I don't think sports is a place that we'll go too quickly for budget savings.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck, Superintendent of Eureka City Schools. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redec, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Fred, before the break, we were talking about graduation, and I know that there are the four different models you guys have got. I'm familiar with a couple of others also. You mentioned Albee Stadium, and I think that's probably the big elephant on one side of the room, and the situation at the state level with funding is the other big elephant. So you've got two elephants there, and if we can keep them apart, perhaps somebody can, some of us mice can survive. What are you looking at with Albee Stadium? Do you keep it? Do you trash it? Do you put a deal together with Humboldt State since they're not using their football field to be able to maybe have Saturday football at HSU for the next little bit? Or what are some of the options that are there, and what are you looking at for Albee Stadium?
So first off, I want to talk about the short term. So we just finished up having a company come in and do a combination of electroresistivity, something or other.
You mean a survey?
Penetrating, and ground penetrating radar.
Okay.
And what they do is they come in and they take pictures underground to determine if we have any sinkholes. And they're in the process of analyzing all that data that they collected about 2 weeks ago. We expect to hear from them in just the next couple of days. And if there are any open sinkholes down below, we have to open it up and fill them in. And then the field will be certified safe to use until the rainy season again. And so that'll get us all the way through the summer, well into next fall, providing that there are some sports programs happening, allow us to do graduation there, all those kinds of pieces. So the short-term plan is to do that. The long-term plan, I want to say thank you to the voters of the greater Eureka area for passing Measure T. That was an $18 million bond, and that really says a lot about our community, because across the state in March, two out of every three local bonds that were on the ballot failed, and in Eureka, it passed. And so that says a lot for our community and how supportive they are of schools and how supportive they are of the youth in our community, and I think that's just amazing and a tremendous statement about our community. So makes me really proud to live in a community that supports education that much. So the long-term plan is we're working with Sacramento right now, specifically the Office of Public School Construction, to get matching funding from them for the dollars that we put in to fix the culvert. And so we are going to fix Albee Stadium, the softball field, and Bud Cloney baseball field as well, and come in, fix all the drainage, and all-weather track will be coming in, brand new. We're discussing what the scope of the project will be right now. We're working on developing the estimated cost of, like, turf field versus synthetic field, lights on the baseball field, no lights on the baseball field, lights on softball or no lights, synthetic infields for baseball and softball, or all synthetic fields or all natural turf fields. And so we're going to bring all those options in front of a committee, and they're going to provide a recommendation to the board, and the board will ultimately approve what the scope will be for that project. Time frame wise, we're committed to having this project done 2 years from the end of this summer. So basically a year of little less than a year of planning. We think we will be out, well, it's about a year. We think we will be out of DSA, Division of State Architects, with an approved plan by this time next year to start construction on the whole project.
Looking at it from, I guess, a non-educational perspective, ton of money being set into something that is a facility, compound, whatever, that we could argue is redundant. We could argue doesn't have an awful lot of use. How are you looking to bump up the level of usage or rental fees or whatever it is to make it a viable investment? You know, an all-weather track, okay, that's dandy, but how many schools have track and field meets anymore? You look at a synthetic field and you got soccer and football, but if it's just the high school, what are you talking, maybe 40 or 50 uses other than practice? Are you looking to partner with the community to have perhaps regional sporting events as fundraisers, as economic drivers? How are these facilities going to be utilized so that everybody wins from this rather than just a small element of the community?
So that's a great question. The one group you're forgetting about, though, is our PE program, and that's actually the number one user of the facility, because we have our 1,200 students at Eureka High School, approximately half of which are enrolled in a PE class. So there's 600 students that are using those facilities every day that the weather's good enough to go down there and use the facilities. And so that's the number one user of the facility. But I don't want to leave out your other question, because one of the things that we really want to do, and one of the advantages of having an all-weather field, is that you can bring in the Pop Warner sports, the soccer sports, because the field, on a natural turf field, you wear out the grass by using it too much. You just football alone will do that. And if we go to a synthetic field, it could be used 7 days a week, and you're not going to wear out the natural turf that's on there. And so it'll provide that opportunity to bring more community events in, not as a fundraiser for the district, but to bring the community together. The board's vision, when we put this bond out there, wasn't as a moneymaker. It was as a break-even when other groups use the fields. And so that's what the board's vision is with that. And then we've also been working a lot with the city of Eureka in this idea of creating more than just the field there at Eureka High School, potentially doing something with the rotary fields that are connected to Alice Burney over on the other side of town. If we can find some grant funding with parks and partnering with the community and create multiple synthetic fields so we can attract some of the teams out of the valley for, say, soccer or something like that, to have tournaments over here where it's nice and cool in the summertime. And I think that that's a tremendous potential for our community to bring people over here and to boost the tourism industry and provide better facilities for the folks that are here in the community.
Just one quick point of clarification, Fred. When you said break even, is that the operational cost for the facility, or is that a retirement for the bond amount?
That's the operational cost for the facility.
Okay.
So, and the reason we look at it that way is because that field is truly community funded. It's a community field. And so we don't want to charge a bunch of money for, say, Pop Warner football to come in, or the youth soccer league to come in, or a youth softball or baseball league to come in and use the field. If it's a for-profit group, that's different. But if it's youth that are in our community already and they're part of the taxpayers and stuff that are out there, it's the community field. And so we want to just, when I say break even, whatever it takes for us to have a custodian go out and open if it's during off hours, that's what break even is.
All right. KINS News and Information Time is 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. So, Fred, when are some of these variables going to start coming down? Are you expecting to get anything certain out of the state? Or are you're going to have three or four different budget options that are in play and trying to figure out whether you're up, down, or sideways?
I think everybody's trying to read the tea leaves right now, and so I don't think there's going to be anything certain anytime soon. Like, for instance, right now, the state's May revise of the governor's proposal on what we're doing with education for Eureka City Schools specifically means 10% cut. Our revenues would be $3.6 million. It's a little bit of an offset in pensions, and so we're looking at a cut for Eureka City Schools specifically around $3 million if it were to go through just like it is. We had a board meeting last night, had a conversation with the board, and direction provided by the board, which I fully support, is need to wait and see. We don't want to go out and rile everybody up and make all these cuts to accommodate this $3 million proposed shortfall in revenue, because nobody knows if that's going to happen yet. We need to let the state work through their budget issues. We need to wait until July 15th to see what the revenues are, since the tax date was pushed off till July 15th. And then the state is planning on adopting a revised budget in August. And so even the budget that is supposed to be adopted by June 15th is just a guess and reading the tea leaves on what they think that the revenues are going to look like. And so we don't want to get everybody all stirred up and start doing all this stuff in response and making cuts until we know we have to.
Well, hopefully it won't be as bad as what you think it is, and the economy will be back and everybody will be smiling just a wee little bit more. Thanks for coming by, Fred.
Yep, thank you. Good talking with you.
All righty. Happy Memorial Day. See everybody tomorrow.